right, Matchroom Radio's back. I am David Diamante, and we're here in Liverpool, one of our favorite fight cities. Obviously, it's a huge fight weekend with Liam Smith and Anthony Fowler in the Battle of Liverpool. And yesterday, we had a Mancunian on, Anthony Crawler, but today, we've got a great, great guest. And, you know, Anthony Crawler just retired, and our guest today is a Liverpudlian, and he has just announced his retirement. I've got the great heavyweight David Price. David, it's nice to see you, man. Thanks for coming down.
Great to see you, Dave. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you look really good, man.
Yeah, feel good. Yeah, I've been trying to keep in shape in general anyway, but thanks. Yeah, feel good.
So, man, I feel like I haven't seen you for quite a long time. I haven't seen you probably since the Chisora fight.
That's right, yeah. Well, I haven't been to a boxing show since the Callum Smith, John Ryder show, which was the last show at the Liverpool Arena, which was, I think it was a couple of weeks after the Chisora fight. So I haven't been near any boxing events since then. So that's nearly 2 years. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been too long. I want to ask you about that. Before we begin, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for a great career, great moments. You know, you're always such a humble, great guy. You always seem to give it 100%. And you've given us some great moments. So from the fans and from myself, thank you for all that.
Appreciate it. I'm humbled, David, to be honest. I've had some great words, great tributes, and they're kind words from yourself. So I appreciate your kind words.
Thanks. Yeah, well, I mean it. And what was it like for you to finally come out and make this decision? Was this tough?
No, it happened over a matter of time. And I think COVID had a little bit to part to play in it, because obviously it just put everything on hold for all of us, really. And I was getting no younger. I'd had the Chisora fight, and I was in training to potentially fight in the February or March in Manchester Arena on the Dillian White-Povetkin bill, and obviously that fell through. And then the longer it went without being even considered for a fight, and I started focusing my energy and time on other things, it just became less likely I was going to fight. So it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction. It was over a period of time. So it hasn't been a shock to the system type of thing. It's happened gradually.
It's been a long time coming.
It has, yeah, over the last 2 years. But to be honest, though, Dave, there's been different periods throughout my career where I've felt like retiring, but I haven't been able to retire. Whether it's been through disappointment, lack of opportunity, and that's the life of a fighter. But at this time, it's the right time, and that's why I decided to do it.
You talk about disappointments, and obviously there's been a lot of high moments also.
Oh, yeah.
But there's some really standout moments, disappointment moments, that we should go over and that I'm curious about, because I'm really curious about how you feel about certain things that have happened in your career. And I know you probably know some of the things I'm talking about. Obviously, the Thompson fights, the Tepper fight, things like that. And you know, I mean, first of all, for the people that don't know, you are a very decorated amateur, and you won bronze in the Olympics in Seoul. That must have been an incredible high. First of all, what year did you start boxing? How old were you?
Started boxing when I was 14. I'd had a little try at it when I was about 11, and I didn't have the guts to carry on going to the gym, and I always resented myself for that. So I always wanted to prove that to myself that, yeah, I can at least go in and put the gloves on and maybe have a fight, and then I can say I'm a boxer. And it just snowballed from then. But so I went back when I was 14, and it's crazy, because that was 22 years ago, and it's gone in the blink of an eye, like everything does in life for all of us, no matter what journey we're on.
Tell you what, man, you're absolutely right.
I look back, and I'm like, a few weeks ago, I was like, has that all just happened? You know, has that just happened to me? Have I just done all that? It's mad, because when you get to the end, it's like it's gone so quickly, and people do tell you, look, enjoy this while it's here, because it doesn't last long, and they're right, you know.
There's a saying that I love, and I think it's really true. They say life is like a roll of toilet paper. The closer it gets to the end, the quicker it seems to go.
Yeah, I've never heard that before, but it's true, yeah.
It just, the older you get too, it just seems to go so fast.
It really does, yeah.
So you people listening out there in TV land or podcast land, do it now. Strike while the iron's hot, because it goes really fast. So you first started boxing at 14, or you said you came back to boxing at 14?
Well, I started probably when I was 14. Okay. I had my first fight at 15.
When were you first introduced to it, though?
When I was a little boy, really. My dad was a big boxing fan, and just had little pairs of boxing gloves in the house and things like that. And then we moved to a bigger house, and we had a garage, which my dad set up as a gym. We had a heavy bag in there, bag mitts, few weights and things like that. So it was always around me in the house. But I first set foot in a boxing club when I was about 11, and then I had about 3 years away from it, come back and took it seriously and started competing.
Were you close with your folks?
Oh yeah, really close. Yeah, really close. Close knit family.
What did your folks do?
My dad is works on ship repair in Liverpool Docks and done it all his life. Probably one of the most hard working men I know. And he's paying for it now, to be honest, because he's getting older and he's struggling a little bit with his joints and his back and things like that. But
maybe he could talk to Anthony Fowler about some CBD.
He's tried all that, mate.
That's a bad joke.
All that,
yeah.
But,
I'm sorry.
He's just a hard working fellow, but he's great. He's in good health otherwise. It's just a wear and tear of work over his life. And my mum was, she just looked after me and my sister until we got old enough, and then she started working in retail, things like that, managing shops. So close-knit family, you know, just always laughing, if anything. We just laughed it all the way. So yeah, it was good upbringing.
I'll tell you what, man, I don't think a lot of people know this about you, because when they see you, you're about ready to get into a fight, or you're fighting or something. But, I mean, everyone says your sense of humor.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I was just talking to the Smiths before I came in here, and Joe McNally.
Yeah.
They had some, they said.
Well, I do, to be honest, I'm quite low-key publicly, and I do like my privacy, but I think if people get to know me on a personal level, it's just not about love. We just want to have a laugh, don't we? That's you know, what else is there to do? We just laugh. But
quote, they called you a funny. See you next Tuesday.
yeah, good. That's good. That's good comfort, man. Because they're all so funny. So yeah, they're recognizing another funny guy. Yeah,
I think I'm funny too, but yeah. You know, looks aren't everything. So anyway, okay. So 14, you started boxing. And when did this growth spurt happen?
Wow. I was always taller than the other kids, quite a lot taller. But then the growth spurt just came when I was about 13, I think. I think I went from being about 5'11" to 6'5" in the space of 2 months or something like that. Because I was going to get checked in the hospital. We were getting regular checkups for a heart thing, because someone in my family, young, died of like a congenital heart defect. So it was my cousin on my mum's side. So I had to keep going in to get checks, type of thing. So I was getting measured. And the next time I went, they were like, wow, you're 6'4" now. And it was like, wow. And then I just kept shooting up. I couldn't get clothes to fit me. My jeans just went dead short on me. And
looking like Frankenstein.
Honestly. And the gym my dad had in the garage, he used to get the jeans, get them while they were wet out the washing machine, tie ropes around the bottom and hang weights off them, hoping that they'd stretch for me. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
So it was like desperation times, but that growth spurt just come, and yeah, it's just that. But I just didn't feel any difference. I was just taller in appearance to other people.
And it obviously probably helped with the fighting too, I mean, being a large guy.
Well, yeah, but I was probably guilty of never really utilising my size to its maximum over the years. A lot of the time I always fought like a bit of a smaller man, because I wanted to prove I could fight like a smaller man. It was kind of like going against the grain. I didn't want to be your stereotypical tall boxer.
Right.
And really, in hindsight, it was the wrong thing to do, but it was just me trying to prove a point. And once you get set in your ways, you it's hard to break that. But it obviously had its advantages, and I did use them to a degree, but I always thought I could have used them a lot
even better. Yeah, so if you went back, you would probably just keep it simple, right?
Keep it simple, keep it long.
Double jab, right hand, and your right hand is known as literally one of the best in the business. I mean,
yeah,
people. I mean, the Tony Thompson, I think, said, "I've never been hit as hard as David Price."
Really?
And this is a two-time world title challenger, a guy that's fought, you know, a lot of different people.
He just about got up off it, didn't he? He was down for a bit of a long count with that. But yeah, the right hand was the equalizer for years and years. And it's mad. I had an operation on that hand in 2014. I had a bad injury on my knuckle, and it was just never the same. Never the same after it. And I don't even know if I knocked anyone out with the right hand after that. And I'll come to that conclusion recently. I was like thinking, you know, when you sit thinking, and I was like, the right hand never really done as much damage, you know, whether it was mental because I'd had the op or what, I don't know. But for years, I only had to clip someone on the top of the head and they'd be doing a funny dance.
Yeah.
And that would give you so much confidence going into a fight, knowing that you had ended at any time. And that only came through practice and repetition in the gym when I was an amateur. I had an amateur coach called Bob Dillon, and he drilled it into me with the right hand about rotating into it, about 20, 23, 24 years of age. And all of a sudden, I just started knocking people out, and I started getting a name for myself on the amateur scene as a big puncher. I was putting people away. So that right hand, it got me out of a lot of trouble a lot of times, really.
I tell you, your amateur career, like I said, a lot of great accolades. And then obviously to go to the Olympics and to take bronze in Seoul. How did that feel? Were you on top of the world at that time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was at Beijing, by the way. Sorry, David.
Pardon me. Yeah. But it was, yeah, yeah. But it was it 08, right?
08, yeah.
Yeah, it was 08.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Seoul was 88, wasn't it?
Okay. That's
the Roy Jones Olympics.
That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, but yeah.
We don't want to bring up Roy Jones in the Olympics. That's a sore spot right there.
I was reading there was something about it last week.
That's a sore spot.
Yeah. Sorry, what was the question again about Beijing?
Just, you must have been really on a high.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
After the Olympics and winning bronze.
I was, but it was like a bit, bronze is a bittersweet medal to win because you have to lose to get the bronze, or like the silver. But I had a disappointing end to the Olympics where I got stopped in the second round by a great fighter, Roberto Camarel, but I just didn't do myself justice in that fight. After beating the world number one in my first fight in a shock victory, beating a solid competitor in the next fight from Lithuania who medaled in big tournaments. And then in the semi-finals, I just struggled to raise myself to get up for it. And I could never explain it. It took me years to figure. I lost sleep over it after it for years until I won the British title. Because it was like trying to figure out what had gone wrong. And it was only I heard Andy Murray do an interview after he'd won Wimbledon, and I wondered, it sounds like could have happened to me. He won Wimbledon for the first time, and the next tournament he went to was like a US Open or something like that. And he said, I just could not come down from the high of Wimbledon and get back up for this tournament and perform poorly. Now, my first fight in the Olympics, it was the most euphoric moment I've ever had in my life. Not only boxing, it was just unbelievable. I knocked the Russian out in the second round. He was expected to steamroll me and everyone else. It was back page news all over the world. And I was elevated that high. I think I just struggled to come back down to ground and focus on the job properly. So because of all this, after the Olympics, it was like, My dad said to me, it's like the book Moby Dick starts. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Yeah.
It was a bit of both. But it was a buzz. I was getting a lot of attention. I was a big name in the city and I'd won a medal and everything else. But apart from that, there was question marks over me because of being stopped.
Right.
And the promoters weren't lining up to sign me.
Well, you signed with Frank Maloney, yeah?
I signed with David Haye first.
Oh, and David Haye, of course, yes, sure.
With David Haye and Adam Bood, Haymaker, made me debut. And then they lost their TV deal, so they had to release me from my contract. And Frank stepped in then, or Kelly, he stepped in, and he'd been a bit vocal about, you know, wasn't impressed by me. So I weren't keen on him, but I thought I'm gonna give him a chance because he was keen. He just lost Darren Sutherland, God rest his soul, who just passed away, and he was like, look, I want to do something with you, I think it can work. And I thought, right, I'm gonna give this a shot. He had the Sky deal, he was on Sky quite often, and I thought I'll be a bit of a big fish in a smaller pond, and he put his time in it. And to be fair, it was a good move. It was a great move, to be honest. I had a great period.
Well, that was an amazing run you had.
It was amazing, yeah. And they done a great job of promoting me and making me a bit of a name in the country, because they put all their eggs in my basket. So they went full on the publicity train and everything else, because they believed in me. And, you know, it was exciting times, you know, and they had big plans, and it was exciting. And it's just a shame it didn't come to fruition. But even if it didn't, the experience of heading towards it was still an experience. Because some people don't even get that.
Yeah, very thrilling.
Yeah, it was exciting. Exciting.
And I feel like in the heavyweight division, you're always just that close
to
something huge or that far away.
You're right. And you know, the first time I lost, I wish I'd have had that mentality, because the one loss in my mind was the end of the world.
Yeah.
And it was only later in my career I realised you only have to string a couple of wins together and you're getting big fights again. It's as simple as that. You know, AJ now, he was like, he has to go straight back in to beat Usyk to redeem himself. And that's how I felt when I lost to Tony Thompson. And if I could have my time again, I'd have just left Tony Thompson and never have had to deal with him again, because he was a bit of a bogeyman for me. And trusted the fact that there are other ways to get back to the pinnacle or the top level. And that was what I should have done. But your ego and the fighter in you just wants you to get right back in and put it right as soon as possible, and it didn't work that way for me.
I understand that. I understand very much what you're saying. I want to talk a little bit more about it, because you talked about the mentality of it, and I think it's such a big, big part of the fight game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you obviously, Frank said that you guys had a rematch clause with Thompson.
Yeah.
And you went back in, you fought him, and you almost stopped him. Mm. You had him hurt. But then a lot of people were like, well, Dave didn't pull the trigger. Yeah. Was it the mentality? Were you questioning yourself at that point? What?
I know exactly what happened. I was exhausted before I even got in the ring, because I'd put that much pressure on myself to win that fight. Because in my mind, if I didn't win this fight,
thought it was over.
My career was over. So I was like, right, get the rematch, put it right. And then I got the rematch, and then I was like, hang on, what if this doesn't? What if I don't win this? Then what? Started questioning, and then started training for the fight. Flew out to Canada to train with Lennox and his Courtney Shand, his strength and conditioning trainer. And it was full on straight away, the training. But it was different training than I was used to. So it was difficult for me to recover from the sessions. So I think I went into a bit of a state of overtraining, so I was going to the gym and feeling like crap. And then in turn, I was like, I'm feeling like crap. I'm not training hard enough. I'm push harder. And it's a vicious circle. Come back from Canada, tired, sparring, got dropped in sparring by a bit of a novice, just a flash knockdown. But it dented my confidence, because I was like, fuck, I've just been dropped by a novice pro.
Right.
I've just been stopped. And it dented me. And like, from there on in, my confidence was a bit shattered, to be honest, looking back. You don't admit these things at the time, because you've got a mask on and you're trying to tell yourself, come fight week, I was exhausted before the fight. The fight shouldn't have happened. And like, you know, it's only now, because there's a bit of a stigma about mental health in boxing, because it's a brutal sport and it's a macho sport, but we are human at the end of the day. And in the Olympics, athletes were pulling out of the Olympics left, right and centre. It's cricketers, oh, I've got time off for mental health. But in boxing, that'd be frowned upon. But at that time, my mental health weren't good, and it was anxiety, exhaustion, mental exhaustion, pressure on myself. So I got in the ring, and my legs were exhausted in the ring, and I thought I'll be okay when the bell goes. And I was fighting an uphill battle from the way I go, but all said and done, still came 1 second away from winning that fight.
You were right there,
you know, 1 second, and I just didn't have it in me to
To push on
and put it on him afterwards. But that, again, after that, that was like, whoa.
But then he tests positive.
But we don't know. We don't know until 2 years later, because the appeal process that he went through. And when you read the particulars of what happened, it stinks, really.
You know, it was a high blood pressure tablet. The first fight was potentially going to get called off because he had high blood pressure, but he managed to get it through and he fought. And that first fight, all I had to do was stay on my feet and I'd have won that fight because he was out of shape. He would have retired on a stool. And he got lucky and I got unlucky. But the second time, he changed his blood pressure medication from the one he was on in the first fight, which was like a more modern, healthy, safer blood pressure tablet, hypertension it's called, isn't it? And then in the second fight, he'd gone back to go on to like this old style drug, which doesn't really get used much anymore. He had to go out of town to get prescribed it and things like that. And it's only this one was a masking agent as well. This is the diuretic one. So you wonder why, you know. It stunk, in my opinion. He come in great shape, had a new trainer. Just stunk, but we didn't know for 2 years because the appeal process is, you know, it's confidential. He was appealing it for 2 years, then got the ban, and we were like 2 years later.
Yeah, it seemed like it just kind of got swept under the rug a little bit.
I wish I'd have known sooner because it might have gave me might have made me feel a little bit easier on myself. I might have been a little bit easier on myself.
You've always been a little bit hard on yourself, haven't you?
The worst, yeah. And you know, that my own worst critic. And you know, as you mature through life, you start to look at things differently. And one of my things now is like you should forgive yourself like you'd forgive someone else, but you find it hard to. And a lot of people are like that.
I understand that very well too.
Yeah, definitely.
It's tough. Yeah, so after that fight, after the second Thompson fight, you split with Maloney.
Yeah. He was trying to get me a new trainer and I split with my trainer, Franny. And then Frank was...
Tommy Brooks. You went with Tommy Brooks, yeah?
Well, Frank wanted Tommy over and he was like, look, come to London, live in London, this, that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like... I said, what have you got, Frank? You know, where are we going to fight? Who's TV? You know, who's shows? I'm not a headline act at the minute. And he was like, and in the end, I went, look, I want to speak to all the promoters. And as soon as I said that, he just said, I'm retiring. And I said, okay. And then that was that.
Well, Tommy Brooks obviously is famous for training Evander Holyfield. And then there's something else that you and Evander have in common.
Yeah.
You've got an ear injury.
Oh, yeah.
you got bit in that fight with Cash Ali, which was,
got bit,
man, I'll never forget that. That was such an odd night.
It was a mad week.
It was a crazy week.
Yeah, it was a crazy week. No, people don't know that week. My daughter was in hospital with appendicitis. The Saturday before the fight, they took her in for surgery. And they couldn't remove the appendix because it was too infected. So she had to stay in all week on an antibiotic drip. So I was back and forth from Alderley Hospital all week. And I was close to pulling out of the fight, truth be told, because I was tired, I was ratty, I was narky. And then I stay off boxing news and things like that when my fights are coming up, because even a headline might make me, you know, see it. I don't want to read anything. So she come home anyway on the Wednesday night, I think, and the next day was the press conference. I got in bed and just out of habit, I went on the News Now boxing page, which has got all the different boxing website headlines, and the top story was Cash Ali saying something about me not having any heart or something like that, and I just went, I went to bed with a bit of a cob on, and then I got to the venue the next day for the press conference, and I seen him, and I thought, right, I'm going to give it to him here, which is out of character for me, but... I thought, now's the time. I'm going to have to do it at some point. And the press conference, it went off a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what led.
Yeah, that was out of character for you.
It was, yeah. But
because usually, you know, you're such a gentleman, you're super humble.
Yeah.
But this, he seemed to...
Yeah, I just thought it was a bit disrespectful because he hadn't or still hasn't. And I don't mind Cash, to be honest, even despite what happened. But he hasn't done anything to be able to judge me on that level. You know, it was a bit disrespectful, and I thought, right, it's one thing Tyson Fury saying things or Chisora or Dillian White, whatever, but not this upstart, you know, how dare he? So I just thought I'll give it to him, but once the door was open and the words start coming out, it's hard to stop. It's like when you have an argument with your missus, you'd open the door and like it all just starts flowing. And do you know what? People still come up to me to this day and they say, I've been watching that press conference there with you and Cash Alley, you know, it's hilarious. And I'm like,
oh, it was funny.
Well, it was funny, but that's what got him fired up and the biting thing happened then.
I think he was just looking for a way out.
I think he was at that point. I think he was. I did.
Because first he bit your
he bit me shoulder.
He bit your stomach or something.
On the floor, yeah. But I hit him with a left hook to the body in the fifth round. Now I weren't feeling great in that fifth round, to be honest. I was starting to feel a bit tired and I'd probably got my second wind, but I hit him with a left hook to the body. And it took the wind right out of his sails. And then I hit him with a right hook to the head and he wobbled. And next thing, we're on the floor. And that was his out. That was his out.
That was his out.
It was the bite, yeah. That was his out. And I was like, there's not many more things that can happen to me now in a boxing ring.
I've seen it all.
I think it all happened to me. Apart from like the fan man coming in, like the Holyfield.
Exactly.
Whoever that was again.
The fan man fight. Oh, man. Well, you know, speaking of out, like when they took him out of the arena, I mean, it was just a shower of beer. At least let's hope it was beer because you never know what could be in those cups. But
it was.
But there was a shower.
Yeah, it was. And
it's quite a night.
I've got a loyal following in this city. And
yes, you do.
A lot of people had pinned high hopes on me over the years. So I always felt like I'd let them down a little bit. But I think they just like me for who I am as well. And I represent a lot of the people of this city. So when someone's done that in a boxing ring to me, that's their way of disapproving that I'm their man and you don't do that, you can get away with it.
Of course. And we're skipping over a lot of things and we'll come back to some stuff. But before we do that, because you, as you said, you are a man of the people here and you're from the North Side, right?
Yeah.
And there's a big derby this weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, Kirkdale v. Toxteth.
Yeah.
North v. South, yeah. Smith v. Fowler.
It's brilliant.
It's a brilliant fight. Brilliant. How do you look at this fight? I know you know the Smiths very well. You're very close with them.
Yeah, look, I know Anthony Fowler. I've known him since he was a kid, and I'm close to the Smith family, and I've been for many years. And Joe Mack, who trains Liam, was my trainer for the last 2 years of my career. So I'm firmly in the Smiths' corner on the fight. But from looking at it from... Just from a boxing point of view, it's a great fight. It's a brilliant fight. It's a lot more of a 50-50 fight than some people think. Are giving it credit for being. Yeah, you know, Anthony Fowler's an ex-Olympian. He's looked sensational in some of his fights, I think. Really, really good. But Liam Smith is a quality, top-level operator, just below elite. He's world-class. And then you've got your Canellos and your Golovkins, your elite fighters. Liam's just on that tier below that. He's so clever, wastes very little energy. And I think that will be the telling point, is how much more economical he is with his energy compared to Fowler. And I think that'll be the telling point.
I mean, I think also mentality too. Liam's very mentally tough.
He's a hard case. We call him a hard case.
He's a hard case.
Yeah, yeah. And I've always said about Liam, even though I'm close to all of them, I've always said to him, even when he's had like five fights and I think he drew one, he was heartbroken and all that, but I always did say he was my favourite out the Smith brothers. He's just had something about him. Like his constitution, he's just got something steely. He'd fight me now there. He's one of them fellas. He won't back down to anyone, and he's an hard case. Yeah, he's great.
True scouser.
Yeah. Oh, he's the most scouse looking fella. That's what my dad said. My dad said that Beefy's the most scouse looking fella I've ever seen. You just know he's a scouser by looking at him.
You know, you touch on a point here, which I want to ask you about, because, yeah, you're a fighter. Yeah, you got a mean right hand. You fought some great, great fighters. You won a lot of titles. English, British, Commonwealth, WBA, Continental. But there's some fighters that have spite.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if you ever felt that you had that spite, because you were a really nice fellow.
No, I did have that. You know when them gloves would come on? More so earlier in my career, but when them gloves would come on fight night, It's like when I fought Dave Allen and he got stretched out the ring. The fighter who was in the ring at that time with the gloves on, with the adrenaline, I didn't give a fuck what happened to Dave Allen, because that's part of boxing. Now, once them gloves come out,
yeah, it's a different, of course.
I was like, I hope he's okay and everything had calmed down.
Of course.
So for me, that mentality when you're in a boxing ring.
So you have the spike.
It was there, yeah, it was there. It might have shown in some fights, but.
Was it always there?
It was always there. It's like when I knocked Audley Addison out in the Echo Arena in the first round. It was another one. It was like, I didn't care what happened as long as I won. As long as I won that fight. So I did have that. But what I didn't have, and that was from like punching someone, knocking them out, want to see them knocked out, got a buzz out of it, got a kick out of it. But what I didn't have and what I can have a lot of the time, and it's a good energy to have sometimes, is anger.
Yeah.
I was never angry. But you can turn anger into energy, which will give it a little bit of a extra boost. And I never had that because I don't know why, I just didn't.
You're not an angry guy.
I'm not an angry guy. And outside of boxing, yeah, but again, people would say, well, I don't want to get angry in the ring, but if you can get angry internally and hate someone, I've never had hatred towards anyone either, but it's difficult to explain, but...
Well, we're not done with this interview yet, so give me some time. I kid, of course. You know, you talked about Tyson Fury for a second there, and you guys were somewhat on a little bit of a collision course at one point.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, it was nailed on, wasn't it? It was like the biggest fight in British boxing. It was
supposed to happen
at the time, and it would have happened had I not lost to Tony Thompson in the first fight. And it's all what ifs, you know.
Of course. But what I'm saying. It's like, Dave, it's like that close.
Oh, look.
Right?
The margins in boxing.
It's, man.
It's so small. And, you know. And
even the Povetkin fight.
Yeah, small margins.
I mean, like, you had Povetkin hurt.
He was hurt, yeah.
He was hurt, man.
But, it seems like it's a bit of a nearly man story. But I can look at these fights and go, whatever. But then you it never ends because fighters probably look at me, you have fought and gone, oh, what if I had to beat him? I had a mate there. And it's just like a never-ending cycle of what ifs in boxing.
And yeah, can, of course, know, you can't look at it like
you
that.
You can't. But you know, the Fury thing was, it was fun. And it was only after I realised, I got to a point where I had to accept that I was at a certain level and I ain't gonna fight your Tyson Furies, and it's at that point you can start recognizing how good they are. Because when you're potentially gonna fight them, you don't want to give them too much credit, you know, a bit of confirmation bias towards yourself, you know, don't look at their good points too much, and you kind of like blank it out. But when you open your eyes a bit more, you're like, wow, it's like AJ, you know, at one point I could have fought AJ, and I was always like, No, I wouldn't have it. He was as good as people are saying. But then when you let go of that, because you know you're not going to be competing against them, you can go, wow, what a fighter. You know what I mean?
Well, I know you're a really humble guy, and I know you don't like to brag or whatever, but I've heard some, speaking of AJ, you and him have sparred before.
Yeah.
I've heard some things.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I can talk about it because I brought that up when I was potentially going to fight him, and I thought, right, I need to bring this up now, and it'll drum up interest in the fight, because it was like, wow, I'm not AJ fighting Price, he's crap fighters. And I said, look, I've sparred him, and when I did, I knocked him out.
So that's what I heard.
He can be knocked out, I can knock him out, because I've done it before, blah, blah, blah.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, and that's what happened. You know, he's a young man, he was still an amateur, but he was two-time national champion at the time, so he was no novice, and I was like, early pro career, just about to have my first 10-round fight, but in hindsight, he was good then, you know, he was good, and he was getting a bit cocky, sticking the tongue out when it did happen, when I caught him with the right hand, because he was having a bit of success. So
that pricey right hand, man.
Pricey right hand, but that's what I'm saying, that's when it was doing real damage with that right hand, so it was no shame for him for that to happen. And what's great about him is any times things like that have happened to him, he's come back strong, and that defines you. He's come back strong, and you've got to take your hat off to him.
100%. And to you too, for again taking a Thompson rematch immediately. Yeah. Yeah. Even if, like you said now, maybe in hindsight it wasn't the smartest thing, but obviously Joshua did it with Ruiz. He redeemed himself, and now he's going straight back into Usyk. How do you view that?
I think, talking of bogeyman before, I think Usyk's Joshua's bogeyman. I just can't see how he can change his game to beat that man. I think his style's all wrong for most heavyweights.
But Dave, come on, man. I mean, you saw how he threw the jab in that fight. You know how important the jab is, especially for a big man. He was pushing it.
Yeah, he was pushing it
out. He didn't snap it.
No.
And that's how you control a man.
It is, yeah. But if you can control the controllables. So he can snap the jab out. But if Usyk's constantly moving and threatening and fighting, and Joshua's quite reactive as a boxer. He does react because he's switched on and he's wary of getting caught. So he will react to feints and movement. That's why I've always said the Fury fight would be difficult because he reacts a lot. He spent the whole fight reacting to Usyk. So yeah.
And Tyson and Usyk both faint wonderfully.
Yeah, and jabbing's one thing, but jabbing against the southpaw is a little bit different. You've got to get it over their lead hands, which is high. So it's difficult, really.
Well, it's definitely difficult. I mean, I thought he also had success when he went to the body. He did it limited.
Yeah, he's done that.
But, you know, the head moves a lot. Not a lot more than the body.
It does, yeah, it does. And that's what you've got to go aim for, the chest. But he moves his feet and his upper body that much, Usyk, and he doesn't stop.
Mm.
It's like, surely it's going to slow down, but it didn't. It didn't, and that's why I think Joshua's ego tried to outbox him when really he should have used what he's been given and just tried to put it on him. But again, it's easier said than done. If someone's moving constantly and you can't set your feet to let your power shots go, Then what can you do? But I don't think it's a great fight for him going back. If he does it, amazing! Wow, it's like if Wilder knocks Fury out tomorrow or beats him, you've got to take your hat off to him, and even more so with the Joshua Usyk, because it was pretty one sided in my opinion.
Can we talk about the Tepper fight for a bit?
Yeah.
Because again, you know, it was for the European, yeah?
Yeah.
And after that fight, again,
yeah,
there were question marks.
Yeah.
I mean, what's going through your mind?
That was probably the worst fight for me to accept. That was a killer, that fight. I shed a tear. I was crying after that fight, and I never cried after losing a boxing match, apart from in the Olympics, you know, because it's sport at the end of the day. It's, you know, worse things happen in life than losing a boxing match. But the Tepper one, it was a bad knockout. And I come back to changing room and I didn't know what had happened. And I was like, have I been knocked out? And did I lose type of thing? It was concussed, heavily concussed. So that was a horrible fight.
That had never happened to you before?
Never, no. Well, never been knocked out. I'd been put down, I'd been stopped on my feet, but I got chinned, bingoed. And it wasn't nice, so it was a shock.
Did it when you came back after that? Were you? I don't want to say scared because you're a fighter. I don't think you're scared.
Yeah,
but were you tentative
in boxing?
In boxing after something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, after that, it was difficult. I'll go on to that now. So it was difficult to recover from that, and I went into a bit of a hole mentally and put a load of weight on, thinking, right, I'm going to beef up and get bigger and go stronger and this and that. So intentionally started lifting weights, put loads of weight on, boozing loads as well, drinking all the time, and had a bit of time out. And then I got a call saying he'd failed a drug test for that fight. He'd been on everything under the sun.
So what is... Take me back to when you heard that. First of all, who called you? Who? How did you find out?
Nissa Sowland, who was me...
Right, you were with the Sowlands at the time, yeah, right? Sure.
He phoned me, and it was like Christmas Eve,
and did you just like? Was it just like this? Tell me the emotion. What, like, literally, when you heard that?
Yeah,
what is going through your mind?
I was shocked because I'm naive to think no one does that.
Right,
no
of
one
course.
Does that. They, right. Why would they do that? They're not going to get away with that. They lose everything.
Right.
I was like, what? Again, but not long found out about the Tony Thompson thing. So I was like, what? Furious.
If I didn't have bad luck, I'd have no luck at all, right?
I was fuming. And then I started reading the details, and this guy had been on everything under the sun. Anabolic gear, power increasing gear, a dangerous shit. Like,
yeah.
You know, and that, and I was, here's me doing a fucking full 10-week, 12-week honest training camp, sparring hard every day. And I did train really hard for that fight. I got tough sparring, got Ajit Kabayel in, who's like a world ranked fighter now, and was going to the well every day. And I wanted that European title to put my heart and soul on the line. Got in the ring and got knocked out by a cheat. So I was furious, and I was straight away, I was onto the boxing board and was like, get this fucking loss off my record.
Right.
It's a no contest.
Sure.
It's a no contest.
Which it never became.
Why am I only finding out now? Why haven't the EBU, who'd done the drug test, contacted me to tell me this? And, you know, what happened anyway, he just got stripped of the title and the result stood, which was insane.
Yeah, the result stood.
And I think the rules have changed since then because it kicked up that much of a fuss about it. I was proper discouraged with boxing at that time. And I didn't know where to go, really, after that.
You trained with Dave Caldwell for a while also.
Yeah, so I went to Dave after that. Now, talking about being tentative, Dave Caldwell's a cracking coach, by the way. We just didn't.
And a lovely man.
Yeah, he is, yeah. And we just didn't hit it off, though, on a working. He improved me boxing brilliantly. But eventually, we just weren't working well together. There's a bit of a strain in the end. And he'll admit that. But me and Dave are cool. He's sound. I'm working with him tomorrow on the fight. But as a coach and as a boxing man, he was aware that I needed rebuilding from that defeat. So
yeah.
he got Cash Ali in to spar me. But it was just conditioned sparring, easing back into getting it. And he took it slowly with me. And he done a great job of getting me back to being confident. And then I boxed in Goodison on the Bellevue card and got a great win, actually. And it was a great way to come back. I was buzzing. After that, then I was just back to myself then, just back to myself. But he done a good job in getting me back to that level of being confident and comfortable again in the boxing ring, because it was difficult to come back from that. And that's why I look at Dillian White. Dillian White's quite impressive.
He really is. I think I know what you're going to say, but please.
Because he got knocked out by Povetkin.
I mean, sparked.
He didn't care.
And it was a similar situation. He had him hurt also.
Yeah.
But Povetkin's dangerous.
He did not let that affect him one bit.
He's a hard man.
He's a hard man.
He's a
and
hard
I've
man.
I've always said it about him. I've known him since he was really young. And I always knew he had the tenacity to go on to do something good. And when that happened to him, I was watching him in the aftermath and even in the weeks after, and he was like, he's a fighter. And he went back and put that right straight away. So
he's a dog.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
He's
he
a
is,
dog.
Yeah. Hats off, yeah.
You know, I feel like there's so much I want to talk to you about, but Scott, our producer, is over
here. Sorry, I'm always the bad guy.
He's flipping out because we have to do the weigh-in.
I got here late.
11 man. Minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I have to be on stage to do the weigh-in.
Do you want to do one or two of the fan questions to wrap up?
I do, but I want to just finish with Dave here because, again, there's so much I want to talk to you about. And I always love seeing you, and you're such a gentleman. You really are. And I know you're a family man, and you've got two beautiful kids. But if I could just ask you, looking back, I know it's really soon after the announcement, but looking back on boxing, are you happy with what you've done? How do you feel about it? What are your feelings? What do you want to tell the fans? What do you just reflect for a bit?
Yeah, looking back, I think if anyone knew me when I was 14 years of age, they'd be shocked at what I've gone on to do. I was a quiet lad, but I've gone on to do something amazing. You know, I've had an amazing career, and boxing's given me an amazing life. You know, I've travelled the world, I've met people, some fantastic people, made great friendships, been given opportunities outside of boxing because of boxing. Even when I was a young man, you know, I got a job because of boxing. Because my trainer knew someone who'd get me a job, and it's just led me on this path, and it's made me the person I am, because it's taught me so much about life and about discipline, about self-respect. And I always encourage young men and women now to walk into a boxing gym, because it improves you as a person, and that's what it's done for me. Now, as far as my sporting career is concerned, yeah, I have got some regrets, and I've got, if I could have done certain things differently, I would have, but it's what was meant to be, and I have to accept that. And right now, I'm content with my boxing career, and I could go, oh, I wish I could have, won a world title, or I'd love to have fought for a world title, or made more money and not, just retired a rich man, but life isn't about that for me as well. I want to move on to the next challenge. So now the boxing competing's gone, my next challenge is in front of me, which I want to become a success at. So it's been brilliant, and I like to think I've given my loved ones and for friends, family, people close to me, fans. That's why I said I'll pay entertain, because it's the entertainment business, and I feel like I always did. People always look forward to me fighting, because one way or another there was going to be drama.
That's true.
There was going to be drama, but like I said, you can't go on forever. You can't go on forever, and when you're getting beaten, I think I lost half of my last six fights or something. I don't want to go down that road of just being that guy to fight the next up and coming heavyweight. I think I'm too good for that. I've got me health, and I'm happy.
You know, you might not be rich, but I think you're very wealthy.
Yeah.
Thank you, David, for everything.
Thank you, David. Yeah.
I really appreciate it. All right, we got to get to these fan questions. We got to do it really quick.
Dave, I think I was just looking over them. Most of them have been covered apart from the last one. If you want to read it from Katie,
I haven't
Katie
even looked
Reed,
at them yet,
and then let's wrap.
Okay, Katie Reed asked David, will you stay in the game either as a coach or a pundit?
I'm working for the radio tomorrow because we've got a face for radio, got told. So I'm working for the radio. Coaching, I'd like to pass on some knowledge to the younger generation, but I'd like to just be a bit of a mentor to some younger fighters as well, advise them, give them a bit of advice, not even try and get any financial gain from it, because I feel like I've been through a hell of a lot in the sport, especially from a mental side of things, the mental side of things. There's a lot of fighters out there who probably similar to I was, not having major self-belief, but got talent. Now my experience can help them become better fighters younger than I realised a few things, if you know what I mean. So
sure.
Things like that, yeah. I'll definitely stay around the game because I've been in it too long to just disappear. I can't just disappear from boxing. I've got something to contribute towards it, I think.
I think you do too, and I hope to see you very soon. Anyway, David Price, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, lads.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget Smith Fowler on DAZN this weekend, Liverpool Derby. It's going to be a cracker. And until next time, I am David Diamante checking out from Matchroom Radio.